Chapter 2. Warship Lacrimae, Trans-Plutonian Region. The ships came from the night in a ragged cloud. They were the skeletons and carcasses of warships, their flanks gouged by asteroid impacts, haloed by leaking atmosphere. From Pluto's orbit, the fires of their engines appeared one at a time. On the bridge of the Lacrimae, Sigismund watched the picked feed of the approaching fleet and looked at Boreas.
"Signal the fleets into position," said Sigismund.
Boreas nodded at the data hanging in curtains of hololight above the command platform.
"It is a large formation," said Boreas.
The Templar champion's pale face was set, the features hardened around his eyes.
50 vessels at least. Warships too. Damaged but still active. We are reading power in the weapons, but it is difficult to get a clear reading. There is a lot of moving debris out there at the moment."
Sigismund shrugged, conceding the point. The solar system was never entirely empty. Shoals of broken rock and ice tumbled through the void on millennia-old journeys. Added to which, Pluto dragged belts of refuse with it as it circled Sol. Husks of ships and stations that had been dead for hundreds or even thousands of years.
"They could be survivors from a storm," said Sigismund.
"Or another attack fleet," said Boreas.
"Indeed so,"
said Sigismund, without moving his gaze from the picked feed. This latest vomiting from the warp was bearing down on Pluto. Between the outer planet and the abyss spun its moons, Charon, Styx, Nix, Kerberos, and Hydra. The smaller moons were little larger than the biggest warships. Warrens of tunnels and bunkers cut through their rock and ice. Hydra sat furthest from Pluto. While her sibling moons were fortresses, she was little more than a shell around a core of reactors. Those reactors powered equally vast signal and sensor arrays. From Hydra, the watchers on the solar system's outer sphere could see far and coordinate the firing and signaling of all the rest. Of those others, Kerberos stood apart in another way. Clad in steel and weapons, she watched over the void with enough firepower to break a battle fleet. The name Kerberos was an echo of a tale which told of a three-headed hound that stood at the gates of death. Sigismund could not think of a more appropriate title. Together, Pluto and its moons were a fortress on the edge of the abyss. One day, the last battle of the Imperium would begin, and on that day, Pluto would be the first wall against which the attackers broke.
"Do you ever wonder why they come?" Boreas grunted. "Is it spite, or strategy, or insanity?"
"It does not matter why, only that they do," said Sigismund.
"This is no longer a war of hope. This is a war of vengeance and obliteration," murmured Boreas.
Sigismund glanced at the other warrior.
"Strange words, not your own. Where did you hear them?"
"From a lost friend,"
said Boreas, but added nothing more. Sigismund turned away. Something had changed in Boreas in the time since the war had begun.
"Have I changed as much?" wondered Sigismund. "What will we be by the time we must fight for the last time?"
"What is the battle order?" asked Boreas.
"Move us to within gun reach. Broadcast orders for them to cut their engines and make their weapons cold. Prepare targeting to hit their engines on my command, and only on my command. If they are hostile, Inwit and Sol battle groups strike the middle and cross. Fire to cripple, and then we board them."
"How many ships do you wish to hold back on the line?"
"Acre battle group. The guns of the moons can handle anything that gets through. Take the engines. If they try to push through deeper in system, then execute them." He paused. "If they are hostile..."
"My lords!"
The shout came from the communication pit to the side of the platform. Sigismund looked in the direction of the voice and saw one of the astropathic relay officers rising from his seat. The man's face was pale above his black and yellow uniform.
"Speak,"
commanded Sigismund.
"The choir has received word from the third sphere,"
said one of the other officers.
"An attack is in progress."
Another officer began to speak, hands pressed against the vox connection bonded to her ears.
"The forces of the fourth sphere are reporting. Lord Sigismund!"
A voice cut through the others. It was the voice of Anassis, the senior amongst the communications officers and the one directly linked to the astropath Prime on the Hydra Moon Fortress. If she asked for his attention, it took priority, even over the dire news coming from within the solar system. The other communications officers fell silent as she looked up.
"Fire on the mountains," she said.
Sigismund blinked once, not needing to question what she had said or doubt its meaning. Within his mind, he saw an old memory of events that had not yet happened. The walls of the Imperial Palace falling in fire, a sky of iron, the dead covering the ground. It had come, at last, as it was always going to. He looked up at the picked feed of the ragged swarm of ships closing from the void, and as he looked, the first of them fired. Alarms cut through the air, shouts rose from the Auspex pits. "All ships engage," called Sigismund. "Maximum force!" Boreas was shouting orders a second later. The Lacrimae shook as it came to full life. Sigismund pulled his helm from his waist and clamped it over his head. The war was here. The enemy was come at last, and he would be the first to face them. Docking Gantry Gamma 19, Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit. The docking collar clanged as it locked into place. Miss Madra glanced at her shul, but he had lowered the visor of his void armor. Around them, the auxiliaries stood, faceless, behind masks of brushed plastile. Between them, the caskets of the two dead astropaths sat on a tracked trolley. Her Volkite charger felt heavy in her hands, its weight familiar in a way that brought old memories to mind. Her pistols were hidden in a pouch at the small of her back. She shifted her weight. Air began to hiss around the door hatch. Strategus Morhan nodded to her, his exposed face as blank as the masks his subordinates wore.
"Alpha to Omega," he said,
and the words startled her. She blinked.
"Omega to Alpha," she replied.
Lights in the docking bridge pulsed. Ashul was a still presence at her shoulder, his finger tapping the casing of his gun. Tap, tap. Tap, tap. She drew and held a breath. Calm. Focused. The next steps clear in her mind. She could hear the track units humming beneath the casket. A line of blue light arced around the hatch in front of them as it opened. Warm air billowed in and became mist. She felt her muscles begin to tense in sequence. Figures stood in the grey air beyond the hatch. Armour plates bulked the figures' shoulders. Weapons hung from their hands, pipes and weapon feeds stretching to their backs. Light glinted off gloss crimson and white carapace. Inferalti hussars, she thought, as her eyes filtered through them. One of the old hundred. Elites. 20. Heavy weapons, loaded and ready, fingers on triggers. Could have been worse. It could have been the Imperial fists. Tap, tap. Tap, tap. She forced stillness into her muscles.
"Your orders?"
A voice came from the ranks of the hussars, the words a growl of speaker static.
"We are the escort for the astropaths from the throne world. They died en route. We are here to give the bodies to the astropath on